Wild Delight Bird Food, which aims to support wild bird populations with clean, nutritious ingredients in every blend. Available at Chewy.com.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
All I can get is static or variations on the central musical rhythm.
I only wish there was some way we could tell it to shut up. It's driving me crazy. And it keeps getting louder.
We have no way of estimating the volume this creature can produce.
The only logical solution is to listen to CJSF 90.1 FM. They broadcast from Burnaby Mountain in British Columbia. Let's tune in now.
Quay.
Why eat beef snack seal?
Tan she.
Tanek e. Negat dakote.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Why is Guist Sumakut Kantilson Pinkton? I'm Tracy Kim Bono, and I'm coming to you from the Penticton Indian Reserve in British Columbia. I'm a storyteller, filmmaker, and most importantly, a grandmother. Fluent speakers have shared with me that our language, a sacred gift from the land and animals, embodies something profound. Our Tsilchin language transcends more than words. It conveys meaning, like vivid pictures. For thousands of years, it thrived solely as an oral tradition. However, in the late 70s, a passionate group of Tsilk people took upon themselves a remarkable challenge of creating an alphabet. Among them is Dr. Maxine Baptiste, a true inspiration. Having known Maxine for over 30 years, I see her as one of my Tsilchin language heroes. That's why I wanted to sit down with her and discover how it all began.
It started with my sister, Bernice. She had applied to UVic for, it was called the BC Indian Language Project. And that project was to teach community members in all the languages in BC to learn how to write, read and write their language. And like the different disciplines, like morphology, phonology, syntax, and semantics. And she encouraged me to apply. And I applied and I went. But at that time, my funding never came in. I was there for 6 weeks. And it was so interesting because they did five languages in the classroom. Okanagan was one of them. I stayed in the same apartment as my sister, and I had my two babies. They were two and one. And nothing came in. I had no funding. I had no money. I kept phoning and saying, well, when's my money coming in? And they said, and I kept borrowing money to pay for the babysitter, to get a bus pass. And so I phoned my husband, and I said, we need at least $200 to get through until I get my check. And he said, I'll send you $200, but you come home. So I cried and I carried on, but I went home, and it took me another, that was in 1978, and it took me another 10 years before I went back to school. That was like a really big letdown for me, because learning about languages and linguistics was so interesting. And then when I had to go home, I was so disappointed. And I just stayed home, and I was a stay-at-home mom, and I looked after my babies. And it wasn't until 1985 my sister came and got me. She said, there's a workshop I want you to come to. And I was very introverted, and I said, I don't want to go. And she said, you're coming. I said, no, I'm not. I'm staying home. I said, who's going to look after my baby? She said, I'll find someone to look after them, but you're coming. So I said, okay. So I went, and it was a three-day workshop, 1985, with a room full of elders, Tony Matina, Dave Parker, Herbie Manuel, my sister, and Herman. They were all there to showcase how they wrote the language. And the elders were there to decide which writing system that they would choose to write Okanagan. So every day, and the room was full of elders. There must have been about 30 elders in that workshop. And Glenn Douglas was the facilitator. And they would, all of them showcased how they wrote the language and why they spelt things this way and what sort of letters they used. So they chose the International Phonetic Alphabet on that time.
This was a groundbreaking moment for our language recovery, and Maxine realized there was work to be done. Her first task was to learn how to use a customized typewriter that had been modified with a specialized golf ball featuring characters from the International Phonetic Alphabet. When I graduated in 1985, personal computers were just being introduced to the world. As computers advanced, so did the language. The phonetic system advanced, but it was a challenge. As technology advanced in the mid-1980s, Maxine was introduced to computers. This marked the beginning of a new learning curve, particularly in understanding which font systems would be compatible with the Insilchin alphabet. After much trial and error, Unicode was the answer, which was developed in the early 1990s. It solved many of the problems that were associated with the typewriters and special phonetics that were limited with the alphabet ball.
Well, when we first did the Okanagan alphabet, all we had was a typewriter. So the symbol for the gamma, it wasn't available. So we used a written Y. And some the language learners get confused. They say that's not that, because it's a sound. It's like ligamine, so, or gapen. And then they would say, no, that's a Y. It has to be yeepin. And I said, no, you can't say yeepin for gapen. You have to put it's a gamma sound. But the only issue is we didn't have a gamma to put there. So that was starting to confuse language learners. They didn't want to say the "the." They wanted to say the "ye" sound.
So how do you say this?
It's a gapen.
Yeepin?
Gapen.
Yeepin?
It's a rap. The rap. Yeah, that's the gamma. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was the only confusion for some language learners, because I guess it's hard for them to say a gamma. But
so what is the alphabet? It's a phonetic system?
The International Phonetic Alphabet, the premise is it's one sound, one symbol. So some fluent speakers can pick it up really fast because they speak the language. So if I tell them this word says Canucks, or this word says Weekinchin, or this word says acht, then I tell them that the Bard Lambda says a k.
Oh, okay.
And then A, and then the wedge X. Acht.
It was truly an aha moment for me as I practiced the sounds of the language. I became aware of how incredibly complex pronunciation is and understood why fluent speakers emphasize its importance for language learners. I realized that the new writing system could help identify the correct pronunciation of words. The next significant challenge was to develop lesson plans that would promote fluency while navigating a colonial education system that lacked experts, aside from my nation's fluent speakers.
From 87 to 1990, we had a room full of elders that would help, because at that same time, we started getting the language. They were negotiating with the language to be put into public schools, and the BC College of Teachers said they had to have a language authority to certify fluent speakers as fluent speakers, then they could go into the classroom to teach the language. But the caveat to that was they had to have a certified teacher in the classroom at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that's how we got a lot of our elders into the public schools. And then as a consequence of that, there was a lot of, there was no curriculum for Okanagan language.
Yeah.
So we had to do all the materials and resources and testing. And so we would get together and get the elders together and have them name things that we didn't have names for, like a computer or a typewriter or a stapler or different kinds of things that the language teachers would use in the classroom. So we started making lists of words and starting to build curriculum, starting to put materials and resources together for the language teachers, and we did have a room full of elders that helped us.
How long have you been doing this? 30, 40 years?
I was at Anoka in 1987 to do my grade 12, and I never really left.
So we're talking decades.
Yeah, well, I went... I finished my school, and then Don Fitter asked me if I would be the librarian, and I said, yeah, I can do that. So that's what I did. Like, when I went in the library, most of the books were all in boxes. So it took us 2 years to put everything on the shelf, everything labeled, everything with a number, everything in the computer. And then we had those little cards that we had to put the information of each book, and we had those filing systems for those little cards. And I got the books done, I got the magazines done, I got the newspapers done, and I sat there and I said, okay, now what do I do? And people would come in, and I'd follow them. And I'd say, what do you need? What kind of research are you doing? What kind of book do you want? I'm just looking. And I'd be behind them, and I said, okay, this is not what I want to do. So I decided to apply to university. Well, Tony was the one that told me, because every time he'd come up, I would follow him. Why does this word do that? Why is this word spelled this way? And then when other things are added to it, it changes the meaning, and other things are added to it, it changes again. So he said, you really need to go to linguistics. And I said, but I have to leave home. And that one summer, he said, you're just going to have to bite the bullet and go. In order for me to stay home and to keep taking courses, I took almost every course at OK College. And then when I went to UVic to do my bachelor's, they looked at my 3 pages of courses I took, and they said, you only need your linguistics courses to do a BA. So I was only there for 3 semesters, and I finished my BA. And then I went to do my master's at University of BC in Vancouver. And then I came home. I didn't have anything, I didn't have no work. I was out of school. So my husband said, you have to work. I said, I know. So I went in the vineyard, and that's where your mom phoned me. She said, where are you at? I ran into her somewhere in a store. She said, what are you doing? Are you done? I said, yeah. She said, where are you at? I said, I'm working in the vineyard. You have a master's degree and you're working in a vineyard. I said, it's money. My husband said, I have to work. You come and work with me and you teach at Nauken. And that's when I started teaching. And I took another hiatus. I went to University of Arizona in Tucson to do my PhD, and that was 3 years. And I came back in 2007, and I've been here ever since.
So what does a linguist learn?
We learn syntax, which is the study of phrases and sentences
okay.
in a language. Morphology looks at the pieces of words that are put together to make a word. Phonology looks at the sound system. Okay. What happens when you put two sounds together?
Okay.
Not all languages have the same sounds.
Okay.
Because every language has their own sound system. Phonetics looks like how would you represent those sounds on paper. And semantics looks at meaning. And I also looked at comparative and historical linguistics. And I like that discipline because it goes back to what you call a proto-language. There's one proto-language that was maybe 15,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, all these languages branched out from it.
Mm-hmm.
So the Salishan language has 27 languages.
Mm-hmm.
And it's divided between coastal Salish and interior Salish.
Okay.
So the interior Salish is divided between north and south.
Okay.
In BC, there's Lillooet, Thompson, Shuswap, and Okanagan is northern interior Salish. Across the border, it's the Coeur d'Alene, Kalispell, Flathead, Spokane, Ponderay, Matow, Moses Columbian, and Chelan. I think that's all. That's the southern interior Salish.
Mm-hmm.
And they're mutually intelligible. I can understand when some people speak their language, like at the language conference they have down there. I can understand them. If you look at the neighboring languages, Lillooet has and Thompson have Zeds in their language, but that's a result of the coastal Salish have Zeds and Gs. We don't have Gs, we don't have Zeds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that you can tell when there's a neighboring language, they kind of borrow from that language.
So, yeah, I've heard that said, I guess, really basic Nakhchin, like we all had one language.
Yeah.
And then that really explains to me, now I understand how it branched out into the different language families, because I've been in Squamish before and I've heard words that we use are similar.
Mm.
So that really makes sense. So that must have been fascinating.
Yeah, that's what comparative historical languages do. It looks at what they call cognates. So how does the language say the word eat? Across all these 15 languages, and then they begin to change. Then why does it change from this? And at the last 15th language has a total different word. So how did that change from here to here?
Yeah.
So that's what comparative historical linguistics looks at.
That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody with your knowledge and background of community probably really adds to those studies and really enriches those studies and makes them better, because when you learn that, you also put what you've learned from your community. I asked Maxine for a bit of a language lesson. I wanted to see if I could figure out what some of the sounds sounded like based on what it looked like on paper, but she jumped right into the sounds.
Okay, so this one is called the Bard L.
Bard L?
Yeah, and that one, when you say that sound, you put your tongue, there's a hard ridge behind your teeth.
Okay.
And that's called the alveolar ridge. You put your tongue there, and you blow the air out over the sides.
Okay.
Go. And that's the sound where you say human.
Human.
Kakcha.
Kakcha.
Sisach.
Sisach.
Seens.
Seens.
Yeah, that's
okay.
The sound.
Did I do it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And another one?
And this one is a glottalized T. And that one is... You say T'ina.
T'ina.
T'lep.
Oh, okay, that's hard. Hang on a second.
T'lep, it means t'lep. To tear.
Okay, t'lep. What is this one?
This one is a glottalized Q. Q's are said farther back in your mouth. A K is said almost in the middle, like you say kielch, but kielch. A Q is said farther back. It's a k.
But oh, this, I see.
But this one is a glottal ice cue. It's a...
That's so technical.
Yeah, so this one is... K-chen.
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 K-chen. K-chen. Did I do that right?
Yeah. K-chen.
K-chen.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do one with a flying W and explain what a flying W is.
A flying W, it rounds your mouth when you say the sounds. A regular K is just a k, k. You say kilch.
Kilch.
But then when you put a raised W beside it, it's quint. You round your mouth. Quint.
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 Yeah.
Okay. So in that word, Tim Hulach,
mm-hmm.
Is that why you do that at the end?
Mm-hmm.
Tim Hulach.
Yeah, there's two X-raised W.
Okay.
Tim Hulach.
Tim Hulach.
Yeah.
Okay. And what about this one?
It's a glottalized raised W. It's, this one is, this one is,
oh, that's why you have, that's hard. You have to put them two together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll do one of these and then, then we'll finish our interview.
Pharyngeal, they call that a backward correction, a question mark. And that was a ah.
Ah.
And it's down here, for, near close to your... to your Adam's apple. It's ah, ah.
So it's like when you're joking around, ah.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Eitman.
Eitman.
Eimt.
Eimt.
Eientut.
Eientut.
Yeah.
Ah. Okay, yeah. So you have to say that, ah.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is that?
That one is a glottalized pharyngeal, and that emphasizes the ah. That's, it's a clamming. It goes deeper.
Okay.
Clamine.
Clamine.
Yeah, it goes way deeper.
Clamine.
Yeah.
Okay, that's just eitmen, and this is clamine.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so in asking about this, why is it important that words are pronounced properly? Because I'm looking at this and I'm beginning to understand the importance of pronunciation and not missing those...
That's because if you take one diacritic, like a glottal stop or a glottalization mark, if you take that away, then that's going to change the meaning of the word.
Okay.
So if you say eight, it means rain. Let's see. But if you say eight, you glottalize the T, that's a fish hook. Yeah.
So it's so close.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want to hear the difference again.
Eight. You glottalize the K, but not the T.
Good.
Eight. And then you say eight.
Eight.
Yeah, then that means a fish hook.
Oh, so that's why the pronunciation is important, because you could be saying I'm standing in a fish hook instead of I'm standing in the rain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just like when this lady was saying, she said I would come in the morning and I'm learning my language and I'd be so happy to speak my language at any time I have a chance to, and I'd come in and I'd say chast kwekwatched, and the mentor was sitting there and he goes, say that again, and she said chast kwekwatched. And he said, what time is it? She said, it's a morning. He said, you're saying good evening. You're supposed to say chast kwekwatched.
Oh, and that's that.
Yeah.
Chast kwekwatched. And that's the difference between saying good morning and good night.
Yeah.
So do you speak the language?
I speak the language, but I'm considered more of a silent speaker.
Okay.
Because I used to sit and listen to my mom and dad speak all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened, like, my sister Bernice and my three older brothers, they never spoke English till they went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And the priest came and told my mom, don't talk Okanagan to Esther and Maxine.
Okay.
Because when they go to school, it'll be too hard on them. So she stopped speaking the language to us. And my dad was mad at her, but he wouldn't stop speaking the language to us. He would talk to us, like give us directions, like we're going to go get water, or we're going to pack in some wood, or you can watch me making bread. So he talked to us in the language, but my mom refused. So I would... Then there was all these elders that used to come over to my mom and dad's house, and we had coal oil lamps and we had wood stoves, and they would blow the coal oil lamp out so they would preserve the oil, and then they would just sit there by the firelight and they would drink tea and eat fruit and snacks all night long, and they would talk Okanagan and tell stories and talk about all sorts of different things. And I used to lay beside my mother on a quilt. I'd bring my quilt out there and I'd wrap up and I'd lay beside her and I'd listen. Then I'd wake up and I'd be in my bed. And mm-hmm. they'd be still visiting. And I'd say, who put me in my bed? So I'd go back, but morning I'd be in my bed again. Mm-hmm. But I always listened to them. So I heard a lot of language, but I could understand them, but it's speaking that's hard for me to do. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of difficult for me to talk. I speak with people that I really trust, mm-hmm. but I don't speak out.
You're doing a lot of, you've done so much. Mm-hmm. What do you want to continue doing? What is your hopes for the work that you're, what do you see in the future?
What I really wanted to do was to continue documenting fluent speakers, because all of our, most of our fluent speakers are in their 80s. And then the younger ones are in their 70s. We don't have very many that are in their 60s. And the ones that hold the high language are mm-hmm. in their 80s. So it's important to document them as much as possible, because the language learners that are learning the language, they're learning a more simpler language. And if we lose that high fluency, then that's all they'll be able to speak, unless we have the audio that they can refer to learn higher language, more fluent language than what they have now. Because it's really important to me, because every year our fluent speakers are getting less, mm-hmm. lesser and lesser.
Throughout this country, I've heard many nations express concern about the dwindling time that we have with our fluent speakers. When Dr. Baptiste embarked on this journey, she made significant sacrifices and shared with me that despite the challenges that sometimes prevented her from pursuing her passion, she found a way to continue. I am truly amazed by how she navigated the transition from typewriters to computers. One thing is clear, Dr. Maxine Baptiste has made our world a better place for the Sealk people to regain our language and identity. Thanks for listening with me on this episode of Words and Culture. Isquist sumachatk. Until next time, ninuich achacha guquakwalt.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Audio recording by Craig Carpenter. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Hausin Dang King Sam.
Nmaltis.
Ninuis Achacha Miku Kwakwal.
Kachunautano.
Wapamatin Mina.
You are now tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Want to know more about the channel? Find us online at cjsf.ca.
Are you someone or know of someone who is affected by vision loss? The BC Yukon Division of the Canadian Council of the Blind, or CCB, is a group run by the blind for the blind. From technology training to public awareness to, most importantly, peer support, these are just a few services they offer to help their members achieve their full potential. Come see how we can raise their potential more by visiting ccbbcyukon.com.